Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Today, I want to talk about violence. We're seeing more violence in the world that I just don't understand, or I thought I didn't understand. There's a kind of religious violence that's going on in Iraq where they talk about hundreds of people being killed all at once. There's violence in our streets. Is there a growing violence? Is it getting bigger? So in order to look at this, we're going to have to do quite a bit of examination. I may do this over a couple of programs. But let's start, as we do with almost all programs, about violence in you. Take a look at your own. Before we look at everybody else's, think about your own violence. Have you ever felt violent? Now, by violent, I mean angry to a point where you are out of control, and out of control in such a way that you could easily hurt someone. Have you ever felt that violence? Many of you have felt it on alcohol, for example. Many of you have felt it during some kind of an episode or something. You might have felt it during certain hormonal shifts. We could talk about that hormonal shift in a little while, about what makes violence happen. But I want you to think about your own violence and the history of your own feeling violent. And we would ask you to call us with information on those only at 212-957-2729. That's 212-957-2729. People who will talk about their own experience of their own violence or violence directed towards them. But mostly it's your own I'm looking at. Did you grow up with violence? The rush of violence, the feeling of violence. You know, what is it? What is it? What's the difference between anger and violence? In the gaming world, there's the first person shooter. Do you know what that is most young people do? What is a first person shooter?
First-person shooter, there's a couple like Call of Duty or Halo. They're games that you play as the person shooting a gun in a war of some kind in the future, the past, or the present.
And how old would you say is the youngest person who would be playing this kind of game?
To be honest, it's actually played mostly by people from 10 to 18 years old.
Okay, so between 10 and 18
years
old.
There's definitely people as young as 8 to 12 years old that are playing.
And what happens with this thing is you have a gun, and with your gun you're shooting things.
You're basically behind the eyes of a soldier in whatever shape or form shooting people, yeah.
And as a first-person shooter, you could also have as your subject, as the person you shoot, could be police. Could be any number of things according to the different programs.
Right. Grand Theft Auto you can play. I mean, that's not first person, but it's a shooter. And you play, you know, aliens, you're shooting zombies, other soldiers in various wars. It's all kinds of places.
So one of the questions is this, since it is so active... our phones are just a little out of whack. If you want to call in, you can call in. We'll get to you eventually. Where was I? So according to this programming or this idea, children play with the idea of being violent. Young people, the idea of being violent in these videos right from the beginning. Now, if you have this, if you believe this, let's think about it. Remember the Sandy Hook shootings in Connecticut? Adam Lanza, who was one of the shooters, was the fan of the first-person shooters, including the popular military game Call of Duty. We should find out once and for all if there is a connection between games and gun violence. We should find out. Congress, Obama said we should fund research on the effects that violent video games have on young minds. We're not sure. How does it affect gun violence? How does it affect violence in the rest of the world? We're not sure. Is video games all over the world as well affecting the people who are acting in this kind of way?
There's actually also a game funded by the Army, America's Army. It's called America's Army, and it's basically like super high, like super realistic first person shooter that takes place in war zones that exist now, and it's free. And it's kind of like a sort of propaganda that America's Army sector actually gives to kids to play to eventually enlist in the Army.
So they will enlist in the Army and be able to do this.
And they
at
do
one
the
point.
Things that they've been doing in this game for years.
Being
yeah.
shooters. And, right. So we look at people and we look at shooters and we look at violence and we wonder. Telephone number again is 212-957-2729. We had a caller just a minute ago and I saw it got disconnected. let's take a movement away. Do you ever see a dog? When it bares its teeth. A dog bares his teeth by curling his lips back to reveal his teeth. It is a reflexive action that occurs in reaction to certain situations. What it means, most of the time when a dog bares his teeth, he's telling you a clear message to back off. That's what a dog is telling you, back off. It's a precursor to a more serious form of aggression, which is going to be the bite. This type of dog body language is often accompanied by vocalizations such as snarls and growls. You may also notice other body language that indicates a dog is becoming aggressive, such as erect ears, a rigid body posture, and a tail that is held high. Dogs become aggressive for a number of reasons. The primary reason is resource guarding. Try to take a bone away from a dog if the dog is guarding this resource. Territorial, fear. Fear will make it become violence. No matter the reason a dog becomes aggressive, bared teeth are a sign that he's being pushed past his comfort zone. If a dog is baring his teeth at you, you should seek the help of a dog trainer to try to get you through. But with other humans, how do they bare their teeth? And sometimes they threaten. They become violent. They threaten to hurt you. And so if they do that, usually the thing is to kind of step back from it. You don't want to engage it because that person is nearing being out of control. We've learned a lot about chemistry of violence. You were reading an article to us about the chemistry of a...
Yeah, there was actually a study at McGill University where students drank some amino acids that lowered their levels of a brain chemical called serotonin. And then basically these volunteers could press a button from 1 to 8 that shocked each other. They could shock each other and their... lower electricity or higher electricity to hurt each other. Then the students were given a large dose of tryptophan, which the brain uses to make serotonin. And as the serotonin levels rose, these students became less aggressive, decreasing the amount of punishment they gave their partners, regardless of the increased pain their partner gave them. The experiment's finding was that aggression can be controlled by manipulating brain levels of serotonin. And this was a kind of amazing discovery.
This was a big discovery because... if you think of number one, the level serotonin at its highest level helps you control sex, helps you control appetite, helps you control sleep, and other aggression. So it's serotonin becomes the major factor. Now, when you think about moods and you think about a woman going through menopause or a woman going through her cycle, there are times when the serotonin dips all the way down where aggression feels more available. It could feel, you know, that way. It could feel like you just can blow up at any given moment. Well, men have that just as well. Men have two other factors which are very big that affect their own violence, which is adrenaline and testosterone. Testosterone, normally built into men's, kept in the muscle tissues, which is males are supposed to have it and they were meant to have it. Testosterone is something that you'll find in most men, leads a lot to aggression. Adrenaline as well. Of course it would, because this helps you do the hunt. You know, it helps you get into the hunt. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. You know, we could do that right now. We are playing all kinds of nice tricks today. Now, there is a different way. There are different ways that most people and the different reasons people will feel violence, why they will feel violent. I want to go over a number of ways. And one of the forms that I want you to take, or one of the ideas, is to think of the Enneagram, which I've talked about, which is a way of sorting people out. Violence. What would lead a perfectionist to be violent? A perfectionist. What would lead a perfectionist to be violent? Now, a perfectionist is somebody who likes everything just as it is. If there is a point at which a perfectionist can get can see something that is so imperfect and he can't get it corrected, a compulsion is going to come up and he's going to become more and more and more upset. And as he becomes more and more and more upset because he can't correct the world, there's suddenly an outburst. And you see this sometimes in people who are in priests or who are teaching a great deal. Hold on a second. Michael's been trying to get through to us. Michael, hi, this is Armand DeMille. Sorry we haven't picked up the phone. How are you?
I'm between good and not good.
Most people.
Yeah. And I'm happy to be talking about this subject because I've seen a certain limited amount of serious violence in my upbringing. By that I mean there was a murder in the family. There was a bloody scene where one parent had a bloody nose and the other one was telling me. I walked in on that scene and they each tried to justify themselves.
How old were you at that time?
11.
Wow, what a thing to see. And more of that, of course, is out there. There must have been a great deal of potential. As you think about it right now, the very thought of walking into that place and even telling me about it, does it choke you up? Does it make you feel like you almost can't talk about it?
Yeah, I guess it there's definitely a strong emotional, I'd like that, in fact, when you said something about, oh, that, you know, terrible, I was saying to myself, how terrible could it have been?
How terrible could what have been?
That scene happened.
Well, it's according to where you were when you were age 11. When you were age 11, it becomes very clear to me you didn't feel like you were in a loving family. You did not feel safe. If you felt safe and you walked into one bloody incident, then that could have been cleared up and you would have felt better. But you didn't feel safe for a long time in your family. In fact, you probably never felt safe. So when
my dad was manic depressive.
Yeah. So did he also drink?
Not that I know of. Though there was one time when it seemed like he was terribly drunk, but I wasn't sure what was going on.
So now, what happened to you as a result of this? How did this violence turn over to, you know, I'm sure there were many more incidents, but how did it turn over to you in your acting out life? Do you feel like you ever can become violent? Do you ever feel that way?
Well, in my earlier years, I did mention my becoming extremely violent, the possibility of my becoming extremely violent, so that the people who were trying to help me called my family and warned them.
Because you spoke about it.
Yeah.
But you didn't join any biker gangs and go around smashing people, and you didn't do anything that was actually acting out this violence.
No.
No, but it
would be... even now, if I feel violent, I just shut my door and scream it out, and then take a little meditation and then come out loving.
Good for you. How wise. Where did you learn to shut that door and scream it out? Where did you learn that? Because that's part of the technique. Repressing it does not work as well.
I just know that somewhere I learned that it's important to express your feelings, but doesn't mean you have to dump them on anyone.
Good for you. So do you have any relationships now, Michael?
Yes. I'm a grandfather.
Uh-huh.
And I'll be 81.
Wow, it doesn't sound it. So Michael, when you see your grandchildren, sometimes you see violence among the children. Do you ever see it among your grandchildren?
Not particularly. They're grown up in an extremely loving and supportive family. And because of that, they tend to be very gentle and sweet children.
Well, it sounds to me like they're lucky to have had some kind of a mentor in their grandfather who is wise enough to know the value of his emotions and how to deal with them and how to teach that, too. I hope you stick around with us a while longer, Michael. Terrific.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure. Thank you for being here. Let's talk about domestic violence. Let's talk about domestic violence for a minute. Our number here is 957-272-9212, 957-2729. You know, domestic violence can start when one partner feels the need to control and dominate another. Get this idea, domestic violence. One person wants to dominate the other. I don't know what you're trying to control, but you're trying to control something. Somebody is screaming at her husband, and she's screaming at him, and he's holding back, holding back, holding back, holding back. And she's trying to get him to do something. She wants the need to control or dominate him. Now, abusers may feel this need to control their partner because of a number of reasons. Low self-esteem, extreme jealousy, difficulties in regulating anger, and other strong emotions. Or when they feel inferior to the other person in education and socioeconomic background. This is very important. So when you have a couple who are mixed in different ways and they have two different levels of education, it is the one with the lesser education who will use violence as a way of getting their point across, and socioeconomic backgrounds do the same thing. So again, what happens when a person gets out of control with their partners? It's a result of low self-esteem, extreme jealousy, difficulties in regulating anger and other strong emotions, and trying to get the other person to be under control. Some men with very traditional beliefs think that they have the right to control women, and women aren't equal to men. And they consider women are like sheep. You just got to do whatever you want, and they are going to be at your behest. Thank God that's changed. Now, this domination takes the form of emotional, physical, or sexual abuse. Studies suggest that violent behavior often is caused by an interaction of situational and individual factors. That abusers learn violent behavior from their own family, people in their community, and other cultural influences as you grow up. I grew up with violence everywhere, and I saw it everywhere there was. I could see it, and of course I could even feel it in myself. 212-957-2729. We're talking about violence. We may be carrying this on for a few days. We've got Bill on the phone. Hello, Bill. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Armand. How you doing?
Good. Nice to hear from you.
Thank you. Great subject. You know, I was flipping the dial and I came across this conversation. And I never really discussed this with anybody, but as a child and into my teens and early 20s, I felt extreme violence and rage in myself. I mean, as a child, they wanted to put me on medication. Uh-huh. My mother wouldn't let them do that. But I was just a very, very difficult, rageful child.
How did you act this out? Did you find any way that you could, like, smash pumpkins or do anything?
Well, you mean to relieve the stress?
How did it come out, when it came out?
Well, I used to fight with my brother constantly. And it would reach a point where I would grab a knife and I would throw knives at him. I would hit the wall. I would just be very, very violent. But the interesting thing is I was able to diagnose my own situation later in life as I became more cognizant of how maybe hormones and how diet affects it. And in my particular case, it was the most amazing discovery of my life. I learned that I had some sort of sugar imbalance. And every time I ate, I used to crave starchy foods and sugar, and I used to eat a lot of sugar as a kid, sugar cereals. And this was fueling this rage in me because I ultimately was able to control it very well later in life. And as a matter of fact, to this day, when I have 2 days in a row, I have a very starchy meals, I start getting this feeling of, like, frustration and sort of rage. And I know it's definitely connected to the diet with me.
Isn't that amazing? So it goes right to the chemistry.
Oh, no, there's no question in my mind. And as in my 20s, my last real outburst was right after I got married and I put my hand through a kitchen closet. And I said to myself, I have to stop. I have to address the issue. I never sought professional help, but instead what I did was I started reading a lot about it. And sure enough, I knew my family has, on my mother's side, a lot of diabetes and hypoglycemia and sugar-related imbalances. And I said to myself, this has to be something that's affecting me. And sure enough, to this day, if I go 2-3 days in a row with eating starchy foods, I get right back into the pattern of sort of reacting, and I feel it welling up in myself. I know this is what it is, and it just seems to be an underappreciated fact that people are you know, under the spell of these carbs. And I even read stories that people in jail, the studies that have shown that people in jail, there are men, a significant amount of the population in jails are people who are sensitive to carbs.
Hmm. Amazing. And you know, you talk about, if you think about it, carbohydrates do affect serotonin levels. They inhibit them because you have, what we're looking for is a higher serotonin level. One of the things that make, believe it or not, serotonin rise are tryptophanes. And two of the tryptophanes that are popular is like eating turkey. So you think of a Thanksgiving dinner. Nobody's violent at a Thanksgiving dinner except towards the turkey. You know what I mean? I mean, nobody is, because the tryptophanes are just kind of making everybody mellow, raising the serotonin. Right. Milk also does it as well, has high tryptophanes in it. But with the other things you're talking about, the carbs and the sugars, they lower it. So when you lower serotonin, there is more potential for violence. Right. Now, in your life, Bill, this is what I noticed. With all of this feeling, you never got to a place where you wanted to act it out. Did you go to dances where people, what they call crash dance? Is that crash, Julian?
Oh, I know what you're talking
moshing.
About now.
Moshing. Mosh pits.
Never did that. Never did anything like that because, you know.
Were you afraid of yourself?
Excuse me?
Were you afraid of yourself?
Yeah, maybe I realized that, I knew that as a youngster, I used to literally grab knives and fling them at my brother and my parents, really, at that point. Wanted me, you know, they wanted to address it, so they took me for help, and they wanted to drug me, and I really thank the lucky stars that my mother was sort of like holistically inclined and said, no, we're not going to go with the drugs, we're not going to use any sort of drugs.
And in relationship, Bill, did you have any close relationships, a mate that you were with? Have you spent any time in love with anyone?
Sure, I'm married, have a family.
Okay, now with your wife, did you ever feel that kind of outburst where you wanted to hurt her?
Well, like I mentioned, there was one time where it happened right after we got married, and it sort of scared me. And I said, I cannot let this go any further, because now I'm with somebody, and I could potentially do damage. And I addressed the issue, and sure enough, it was just the most amazing discovery of my life. And every time I see people who talk about their children having these outbursts and unruly in school, I say, please, please look at the diet. You know, they may look at me like I have two heads, but please look at the diet, because it has to be a certain percentage of kids are reacting to these foods, and it's probably a high percentage of
and
children.
What about your children? Do you see any of that among your children? Do you see any kids who are your children having any kind of a problem?
Not my children, no. Not my
so
children.
They do okay.
Yeah, and I would recognize it because I knew what I dealt with growing up, just total and absolute rage every single day, not going to school, trying to fight with the truant officers.
Yet you didn't have that in your family. You didn't have your mothers and fathers violent with each other, right?
Never.
Okay, thank you very much for calling in, Bill. Thank you. Thank you for your contribution.
Thanks for listening.
Sure.
Okay.
212-957-2729. Children who are witnesses of or are the victims of violence may learn to believe that violence is a reasonable way to resolve conflict between people. Boys who learn that women are not to be valued or respected, or who see violence directed against women, are more likely to do the same. Girls who witness domestic violence in their families of origin are more likely to be victimized by their own husbands because they would put up with it. We're going to take another quick call. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Hi, it's Armand DeMille. We've got just a couple of minutes for you.
Hello?
Al, yes.
Yes. My problem from the time I was very young was the fear of violence.
Fear of it. Uh-huh.
Yeah, my father would come home from work, which he was very unhappy about, and he would say, I'm going to kill the guy. He was an inspector. And
you were always afraid that would turn against you.
And I was always afraid. In fact, I remember as a kid saying to myself, the only way I will survive is I have to kill my father.
Yeah.
I said, how am I going to do that? I have to sneak up when he's asleep and stick a knife in him.
So then you became afraid of your own violent potential.
Then I felt tremendously guilty.
Sure, sure.
Even though I said I was going to protect myself, the guilt was horrendous.
So how do you keep down those feelings nowadays? Do you drink? What do? How do you suppress it?
Which feelings are you...
The feelings of being afraid of the intimidation or the violence in one form or another. When you fear it all your life, what do? Do you stay away from people? Do you let yourself get involved?
You would say I stay away from people.
Makes sense. You found the only safe places in your own cave, yeah.
I love ideas, and I've written and I've published a few things, but I love exciting ideas.
So you would rather work in the mind. Thank you very much. Bill, Al, thank you so much for calling in. I'm glad we were able to grab our time with you.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. It becomes difficult. It becomes very difficult, especially if you've witnessed it. You know, you don't know who you are. One of the people said to me, you know, when they were referring to somebody being violent, they said, that's that person's bodyguard. The bodyguard meaning that person is like the dog with the snarled teeth. They are protecting this person. They're protecting them. So when you see that, you wonder who you are. You say to yourself, is this me or is this a stranger? Who is this character? When sometimes if you're a parent who winds up hurting your child, you ask yourself, is it me? Who hurt this child? Who is this person doing it? You feel alienated from yourself. Sometimes you look back and you wonder, where did that come from? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We want to learn to find out as much about ourselves as we can. The Positive Mind is your vehicle or one of your vehicles for being able to learn more. We're talking about violence today. We'll talk about this for a couple of days because the calls are just flooding in. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes. Callers, keep calling back. This is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind. Taking calls about violence, I kind of knew it. If we put up the idea of violence, because we're looking in the world today, I mean, it just becomes silly. Numbers no longer make any sense. The numbers of people being killed, people slaughtering people. One of the things they claim about violence is that violence is allowable if you are protecting your territory. Territoriality is perhaps one of the biggest causes of violence. Somebody wants to take what you have. You don't want them to have it. You're a gorilla, and another gorilla shows up and says, I want to be the main gorilla. You got to fight to the death. That's the way it is. Well, territoriality includes somebody coming in and wanting to take your turf. Or territoriality comes in very often when you believe that the only true thing in life is what you believe in. So if you're somebody who is in Iraq and you believe that your religion is the only true religion, it's the way to God, and that anybody who violates this belief by having saints or other images that are in violation of the concept, that they really are not right for this world, that killing them is not hurting anybody. Killing them is putting them out of the way, so they feel a certain ability to just put people aside. The Nazis did that with the Jews. They were, in a way, killing the race. So the violence was acceptable. Now there are games where violence is totally acceptable. We read about somebody killing a dozen people in a school. We read about somebody walking in on a bunch of students in Iraq and shooting a whole bunch of people, killing a whole bunch of people. The numbers get bigger and bigger and bigger. What's happening? The only thing we could look at is looking at ourselves and our own violence and our potential for violence. Because if you fear it, it's going to happen. The people I know who have the biggest aversion to watching a lion on television go after a gazelle, you know? Oh, I can't watch that, I can't watch that. Well, they have in them a pocket of violence that they're afraid of. 212-957-2729. We've got Yvonne on the line. Hi, Yvonne. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand.
Thank you for being there, and thank you for waiting.
Thank you. Well, I've seen plenty of violence in my life. I grew up in a violent home.
Tell me, could you describe it to me, a violent home?
My father abusing my mother and my sibling.
So he would come along beating people?
Yes. Even after he moved out to live with another woman, he used to come every day and beat up my mother.
He was drunk?
Yes.
So alcohol tends to reduce the serotonin levels once again. So whatever inhibitory factors there were, they weren't there. You know, so he would come over and he would come over like he was going to control her. Now, again, violence is usually an act meant to control the behavior or belief of someone else. So here you are taking, you know, here's your father coming into your house wanting everybody to be his way. And his way is going to be to control even your questioning what he does. So he's going to be all right. He's going to be the right guy. So when Dad would come home, what would you feel, Yvonne?
Afraid.
Afraid. Did you hide? Did you run away?
I used to hide. I was the youngest of the girls. There's two other girls that are older than me, and my brother was the youngest. And him and I used to hide. So we never really got beat up, but my two older siblings and my mother would get beat up all the time.
Well, now something happens with that. When you're the child who escapes, somehow you feel a little guilty watching the other kids get beaten, right? Can you describe that, Yvonne?
It's horrible. Even to today, I know I still carry it with me. I want to make everybody happy, and I know it's part of what I went through. I don't like to deal in confrontation. If I can avoid it, I do, because I recognize also the potential for violence in me. So I try to avoid confrontation whenever I can.
Have you ever acted out this violence in you? Have you ever felt it to a point where you could really explode? Or you did explode?
I did earlier in my marriage, but I married a much older man than me, and I think that helped me a lot because he was so much mature that I learned from watching him how to handle situations. But in the beginning of my marriage, I used to break glasses, and he would tell me, when you're ready to talk, I'm here. I'm not going to be throwing glasses or fighting with you. And, you know, that kind of stuff. That would calm me down. I would get very upset because sometimes he would say, well, when you are ready to act like a civilized person, and that bothered me even more, I would get more upset. But then I would calm down and realize that that's not the way. And now I don't act that way anymore.
No. Do you have any children yourself?
One daughter, yes.
How is it going with her? Do you ever feel like beating her up and shoving her around? Is she a rebel?
Yes, she is.
I would imagine so.
Yes.
She's a rebel, and she's kind of challenging you and saying to you, go ahead, Mom, you got this inside you, good, I dare you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Because in some level you need that, you know? Yvonne, on some level you need to find a way to explore this just a place more different. What I hear in your voice is that this is buried away in your heart, and it's buried in a place that's still coming up. So it may be wise at some point to explore this a little further with somebody like a counselor or something like that.
Okay.
You know, you've never done that?
No.
Yeah, okay. So this may be the time. By the time you're ready to talk about it, it may be the time that you're ready to get it out of your closet.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Armand.
Oh, my pleasure, Yvonne. Thanks for calling
in. Okay. God bless. Bye-bye.
212-957-2729. So violence is a part of children who witness or are victims of violence may learn to believe that violence is a reasonable way. And so they get to a point where they do it. And here's how the violence usually manifests. Frequent loss of temper or blow-ups. Extreme irritability. Extreme impulsiveness. Becoming easily frustrated. Now imagine this. Imagine a woman meets a person, a man, who's got loss of temporal blow-ups, extreme irritability, extreme impulsiveness, and becomes easily frustrated, and you find him very attractive. Why? Why would you find this person attractive? Because people who are controlled, who are inhibited, in some way are not as appealing to many people, because they want someone who's going to be acting out the anger. When you feel very angry, you very often select somebody who is going to be expressing that anger almost as if they're doing it for you. Passive-aggressive people tend to choose acting out people. So you generally will see it. And I use bikers as an example because they're outrageous in the way they could be somewhat destructive at times. Not all bikers, of course. 212-957-2729. We've got Don on the line. Hi, Don.
Yes, hello online.
Hi there.
Great show, as usual. I'm calling up because recently I was a victim of police violence, and ever since this has happened, my tolerance of people being abusive is way down, and I've been finding myself being very short with people.
Don, could you do me a favor and shut down your radio completely?
Yeah, not a problem.
Turn it off all the way.
Done.
And what it is with that is it's like changed my personality quite a bit, and I'm not happy with what's gone down with this.
So when you say you were the victim of police violence, you were in a situation where you started getting beaten by police?
Well, that happened on a few occasions, actually, yeah. And on false charges, I was put under arrest, and things happened where the police were pretty violent with me, and I feel like I had no place to get a defense. And then I was incarcerated.
Wait a minute. Wait. Don, let me get this.
Yeah.
Always false charges. You are never responsible for in some way inciting aggressive behavior on the part of a policeman?
Ever in my life?
Never. I mean, yeah, you're saying, oh, I was just innocent. The police came along and they would just beat me up.
Well, I'll put it to you like this. I was assaulted for driving my car 3 blocks from my bank to my home. I was assaulted in front of my house for this purpose. They were arresting me for eluding police. And I didn't raise my hand to them. They assaulted me, but they...
How do you account for the fact that somehow over and over again, you wind up being the victim of this kind of thing, when most people are not.
Over and over again?
Yeah, you said a number of times you've had this violence.
Yeah, okay, I'll tell you why that happens, because police get your name and get your reputation, maybe either for whatever your behavior is or your lifestyle might be, and decide to stalk you.
And keep coming after you.
And when they get
you,
the opportunity to arrest you on false charges, they find that that's necessary so that you have no recourse to sue them for what they've done.
So in a way now, you are becoming almost a spokesperson for other people who are on the other side of violence.
Well, I'm just amazed that I was chosen to be the poster boy for whatever. And I just don't think it's cool, because it's changed my personality. I'm not very happy with the way I've been treated here. And what I'm saying about that is it's changed my personality in regard to other people. I'm sort of shutting down to other people altogether, because I see they've never responded to the fact that this whole thing was not my fault, and it's been a crazy scene since this went down.
I hear.
And when
it's
going to
be very...
Why is it, am I the guy that's always being chosen? Haven't I ever done anything to incite this kind of a problem with the police? No, I can say honestly with you, Armand, I was not the guy that did that. I did not incite anything with the police to respond to like that.
Boy, I did. You know, I did a number of times in my youth. I did a number of times, but if a cop caught me, he would have beat me up. And a number of my friends did similar things. We were, you know, destructive or rampant or doing whatever we were doing. But you're saying never, never, never. So this is just something that you believe is kind of directed at you, and it's like the police have your number and they're coming after you, and you don't know what to do with it. Did you ever think of...
Well, let me explain this. But one time they broke my doors in my house down. I was down in the cellar listening to headphones. They broke the doors off the front of the house, the whole frame of the door out. And when I got upstairs hearing that giant crash, they put a gun to my face and said, "You didn't answer your door fast enough." They knocked me to the floor with a gun to my face and dragged me off to some nut house up the road and left the house wide open for 8 days while they kept me locked up in a jail cell there. And
Don,
I didn't do a thing to provoke this.
Don, I thank you. I thank you very much for calling in. We'd like to hear that other side of it.
Well, it
sometimes you get to wait.
It's going to happen, okay? Yeah, okay, have a nice day.
Okay, Don. And so what happens eventually, it gets to a point where you just get so punchy that you begin seeing it everywhere. And you know what I wish for you, Don? I wish you had some people you could trust, who you could be close to, so that you could feel safer in your heart. When you get to a point where you don't feel safe on this planet, boy, it's a hard war. 212-957-2729. Children. There are great concerns about the incidence of violent behavior among children and adolescents. Children as young as preschoolers can show violent behavior. Parents and other adults who witness the behavior may be concerned. However, they often say the young child will grow out of it. You know, it's the terrible twos. This is just a phase they're going to go through. Violent behavior in a child at any age always needs to be taken seriously. It should not be quickly dismissed as just a phase they're going through. Your child is acting out. The child is hurting other kids. It's something to see. Violent behavior in children and adolescents can include a wide range of behaviors: explosive temper tantrums, physical aggression, fighting, threats, or attempts to hurt others, use of weapons, cruelty towards animals, fire setting, intentional destruction, property, or vandalism. Now, there are factors which will increase the risk of violent behavior in children. These factors include previous aggression or violent behaviors, being the victim of a physical abuse or sexual abuse may lead the person as an adult to become somebody who demonstrates violence. Exposure to violence in the home or community, genetic factors, family heredity, you know, how is it in there? Exposure to violence in media, TV, movies, so on and so forth. There's so much of it, I can't be sure. You know, I can't be convinced that violence is caused by watching violence. Maybe violence is so felt by so many people that when they watch these, play these games or they watch the TV stuff, it kind of dissipates. Maybe. I just give you the other side of it. So in other words, a person might feel hyper-sexed, and then they watch a porn channel and they may masturbate, and that may take away their hypersexuality. Well, a person may feel hyper violent. And then when they play a game, that's it. The game is over. They've gone through that.
Yeah, growing up, I had a lot of, kind of anger built up in me, and I could never was in the environment to let it out in my family. And I played first-person shooters all the time because it was one of the kind of places I could vent this all out on these aliens that didn't exist or, like, with my friends. And it kept me kind of level-headed in a way.
So there was kind of a relief. You know, when we were kids, we had plastic soldiers. We had metal soldiers we used to play with. We used to create a war. So isn't that something? And I wonder often if among young girls, the way that they play with their dolls is one of the acts of controlling them, you know? 212-957-2729. Matt, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hi there.
Yes, Armand DeMille, wonderful program. You always have great, insightful programs.
Thank you.
Yes, sir, and about violence, I'm going to make mine real short. But as a child, like 9, 10, 11 years of age, my stepfather, you know, he used to hit my mother, you know, every so often, not on a frequent basis, but he had a drinking problem also. And I saw this a lot. And as a child, I would say that when I got old and had a girlfriend and then get a wife, I would never hit her, you know, I would never abuse her. And I carried that out until this day. I never abuse. I'm always, you know, if a woman is, if I'm with the woman, that woman, and she's getting violent or something, I'll leave, you know. I'll get out the way and come back later. I might
Matt, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. Could you dip down to an early time when you were a kid and you saw, can you describe the feeling of watching your mother be beaten by your father? Can you describe it? I mean, it's like, you know, there are so many people who hear about it.
Yeah.
What's that like?
Yeah, I didn't like it at all. Plus,
I know you didn't like it. I know you didn't like it, but what was it like?
It at that time, it frightened me, you know. I was just scared. I was, like, paralyzed, you know, because I didn't want, because I loved both of them, and I didn't want my stepfather to hit my mother. My mother, she would tell me to go call the police, and my stepfather said, don't you out the house, boy, you know. And I was just, sometimes I would just be frozen. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know, I wanted to go and call the police, but my stepfather said, don't, you know. And I was like, suspended. In time, I just didn't know. I was just confused. I didn't know what to do. So I just stood there, you know, and terrified.
Yeah, terrified is the right word. You know, and then you're there, and it's all taking place. And then, after the violence takes place, it seems to go away. Now, what's that like for a kid?
Well, for me, you know, I was one of those fortunate ones that had my own bedroom, and I would just go into my bedroom, and I would think about this, and that's when I would say that when I get a girlfriend and when I get a wife, I'm never going to hit her, I'm not going to abuse her, you know, and you know, my mother was telling me as a child, you know, a man shouldn't hit a woman, and I would say, well, suppose she's coming at you with a stick or something, you know, so just say, well, you know, get up, go to the door, run out, you know. That's, you know, so those, you know, those are thoughts that went into my mind as a child.
Sure, I understand, Matt. You know, and I'm really, it feels sad to me to think of you as a child terrified and crippled by this thing going on, you know, and what it was like, not only for you, but for so many children who are listening, who say, I remember what it was like. The screaming, the shouting, the threatening, the beatings.
That's
horrible
things. Yeah, some of them scenes I'll never forget. It'll always be in my mind, you know. And my mother, she would try to fight back, you know. And wow, it was just terrible for a child to see something like that, you know. And I know in a lot of cases, because I've had friends that, you know, their fathers hit their mothers, and as they got old and got girlfriends, they would hit the girlfriends and stuff. But I'm glad I didn't go that way, because I would go back into my room and I would contemplate, and I would say, no, I'm not going to hit, you know, I'm going to be nice to my girlfriend. I'm going to be nice to my wife, you know.
Well, thank you, Don. Thank you for calling in.
It's a good program. Thank you very much for letting me express my views. And you have a great day with good health.
Thank you, Matt. This is Armand DeMille. You know, you hear the stories of people, and I hear them all the time, of course. I've lived through quite a few myself, and I hear the stories, and the stories are difficult. When you imagine a child being terrified watching this going on. I started to talk about the Enneagram. I talked about the perfectionist. The number of people who house this kind of violence, where it's sitting sometime somewhere inside them, and it could blow up at any moment. And you never know that. You don't expect it to happen. Now, there are many people who are totally aggressive. They feel it could blow up at any moment, and they know it because they're always explosive. So if you're somebody who's explosive going around, you know, if you're yelling at people and shouting at people and you feel, you know, no need to control yourself, you would not be surprised by your own violence. But imagine you're somebody whose total life is dedicated to making other people feel comfortable. You're a server. You're somebody who wants to give. And it's your personality type. And your personality type is to give. You're a giver. And if anybody would ask you, what are you like? And you say, well, he's a giver. He likes to give. Give to get love back, but giving. You serve people. You take care of people. You do that. There is another side of that personality eventually. With the great givers, they can flip over into some of the most aggressive people. So that's important to see. So when I see somebody who is always giving, I say to myself, okay, there's a part of this person that could at any time flip over into violence. Now, most people will never see that character in that person. Maybe their mates see it. Maybe one person sees it. So now let's say that you have a giver in your family. Let's say your mother is a great giver. And you're going to have your mother gives to everybody. And she does all this stuff all the time. But then with you, she has a blow up. Now you could try to tell everybody about it. They won't believe you. They're going to say, not her. She's always giving. So usually the rageful explosion is very private. And usually once the person has it, it's hard for them to recover. Because there's nothing that a giving person hates more than seeing themselves become violent. I'm going to just mention one of the other types today, and we'll continue more with this tomorrow. There's also the type that is a person who is competing in nature, competing for business. Their whole life is about success. How are they potentially violent? Because as their potential, as inside they're competing, and it's almost natural to believe that you have to climb over the bodies of somebody else to get what you want. And then somebody will turn towards you and do something against you, and you feel it's justified to just do it back. If you're that type of person whose entire life is based about your success, the violence comes in competition. And it also comes in extreme jealousy. If you're one of those jealous types, can you imagine, have you ever thought about how you would like that other person to be hurt? You know, somebody who has got something that you want and you wish bad things against them. Violence also appears in many dreams and sleep, which we're going to talk about, Nick, tomorrow. We're going to bring that up about sleep, dreams, and violence. We're going to talk about adolescence, and we're going to talk about feminism. You know, the Violence Against Women Act. So here's what I say. Test your own. Test your own violence. Find it inside of you. Everybody's got a growl. Everybody's got a spot inside them that could actually manifest. Don't be afraid of it, because we're not going to take it over the edge. You're not going to hurt people, but don't be afraid of your own aggression, because that's the stuff that turns into the explosive anger and violence. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. This is Armand DeMille with Julian Joiello. We'll be back with you tomorrow, my friends.
Has gone. Some are